You're listening to Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Ezra Levant is a media figure with a loose grasp of the truth. In 2010, he stated that Ann Coulter could not speak at Carleton University because of the threat of physical violence. No proof was ever produced to back these claims. Later in the year, he asserted that financier George Soros was a Nazi collaborator. His newspaper later admitted that the claims were false. His next target was the North American Muslim Foundation. Levant labeled them a radical group who served as a platform for anti-Semitism and who justified terrorist attacks. These assertions were, again, not true. None of this has stopped Sun Media Corp from providing Levant with a platform both on air and in print. Sun Media Corp has 43 dailies across Canada and a cable TV station. David Kleimenhager believes that Ezra Levant's outbursts in the Sun are not accidental. Instead, they are part of a trend as the Sun moves even further to the right. David Kleimenhager is a journalist. He writes regularly at the blog albertadiary.ca. He's also the author of A Poke in the Public Eye, a book exploring the relationships among Canadian journalists, PR people, and politicians. Hello, David.
Hello, how are you this morning?
Pretty good, how are you?
Pretty good, thanks.
Now, I've mentioned some columns or some things that Ezra Levant has said. A more recent column focused on Calgary Mayor Naheed Nenshi. Why is Nenshi his target this time?
I think Nenshi is a target for Mr. Levant, principally because Mr. Nenshi is a liberal in the small L sense, that he was a successful politician from the sort of center, maybe center-left, who is quite an appealing character who managed a real come-from-behind win and became the mayor of Calgary. Now, but the point on which Mr. Levant attacked him in part, well, he accused him of being an anti-Christian bigot, which is an assertion that, in my view, there's absolutely no evidence for. And he really made a big deal about the fact that Mr. Nenshi is a Muslim. Which is well known, and there's absolutely no secret about it, right? He's the first Muslim major city mayor in Canada. The mayor of Edmonton is Jewish, so perhaps some of the stereotypes about Alberta can be put to rest. But anyway, I think the real reason for the attack was the liberal nature of his policies, and that Mr. Levant is a hard-edged conservative, an ultra. I don't even like the term conservative because what these people really are is neoconservative radicals.
What kind of basis did he give for calling him an anti-Christian bigot? I mean, was there anything that happened to bring that out?
Well, there's an evangelical preacher in Calgary who has made for many years now seems to have made a point of getting himself in conflict with the city bylaw regulations. One of the things that this fellow has frequently done is he's used a megaphone that's too loud for the city noise bylaw. And it's part of his shtick to be in conflict with the city. And this goes way back, precedes Mayor Nenshi's time in office by a long time. So essentially what happened in 25 words or less, if I can manage that, is this fellow and five of his supporters turned up inside the City Hall building and began to conduct a worship service. And they were asked by security to leave, and when they didn't, security called the police. So from this, Mr. Levant spun this, to me, fanciful claim that the mayor was an anti-Christian bigot and that the mayor, I believe the phrase he'd used, had called out the boys with the billy clubs. Well, we don't know what the police who came, I don't know if they were even boys, but they... Or whether they had billy clubs, and they certainly didn't use them. It sounded to me from the press accounts, I wasn't there, but like a very quiet, modest kind of, let's move along, folks. And then when they didn't, this fellow was arrested. But this is part of a long pattern. So really, what Mr. Levant is doing is he's using this event that took place in the city of Calgary as an excuse to stir up dislike of the mayor. And I think probably coincidentally to stir up Islamophobic hatred. I really think his motivation has to do with the mayor's politics, not to do with the mayor's religion.
Is this kind of aggressive commentary typical of the Sun?
Well, it's certainly typical of Mr. Levant. And I would say it's typical of the Sun, too. For years, they've had a sort of a right-wing slash populist bent to their coverage. But in the last few years, they've moved fairly dramatically to the right, and there's been a movement of the kind of stuff that you would expect to see in their columns into their news coverage. Well, although this has been a trend everywhere in Canada, including other chains, newspapers.
So let's talk a little bit about the news aspect of the Sun. How is the actual news coverage?
Well, there's a couple of issues here. I think the news coverage on political issues, what they do, now tends to be very biased and very focused on getting the Harper Conservatives elected and reelected. We see in Alberta, for example, where the Progressive Conservative Party, it's still called Progressive Conservatives, elected this woman, Alison Redford, as their leader. Ms. Redford is, I think, a pretty conservative person by my standards, but she's certainly more to the center than some of the other candidates. Well, the Suns, I think you can make a strong case in their political coverage, are pushing for the election of the Wild Rose Alliance Party, which is a much more hard right party. So that's part of it. The other thing that has been happening, though, is that for years now they've been paring their staff back and back, and they're at a point where they can barely operate, barely cover the news, I think. And they have very small newsrooms. They just recently laid off another 400 people throughout the chain across Canada. So one of the effects that has, and this serves a political and an economic purpose, is to move their general news coverage. We see this as a trend in news everywhere, to covering mayhem, right? Covering traffic accidents and crime. This also has a political purpose, in my view, though, because it goes to the conservative agenda of creating the impression that the country is riddled with crime and that it's really dangerous and we need lots of prisons and we need to spend money on very harsh laws and harsh enforcement and so on, and not on social programs. So it tries to divert the attention from the need for social programs that can prevent crime. So there's a political aspect to it, in my view, but there's also a kind of practical aspect in the sense that the paper is or the chain is economically suffering from a variety of the recession, the impact of the internet, changes in people's reading habits, and so on. So they're looking for ways to cut costs, and covering crime and traffic is a cheap kind of news to cover.
I was going to ask you a little bit more about how the news could promote the Conservative Party, because we usually think of an editorial promoting a party, but not news. But you see it in terms of the selection that they're influencing people to subconsciously support then a conservative agenda?
Well, sure. I can give you a good example of how this works, although this doesn't come from the Sun newspapers. But I read a column in Post Media the other day by one of their main columnists. And he was, I can't even remember what the column was about, but he took this kind of sideways shot at the New Democrats. And he said, his comment was, if the New Democratic Party could be even more ignorant of the economic facts. And then he went back to whatever his main topic was, right? So there was just this pass-off assumption that the New Democrats are economically ignorant. So I wrote him I sent him an email at the email address that was printed on there and said, what's the basis for this claim that New Democrats don't know what they're talking about on the economy? Well, as it happened, the email never went through. It got bounced back and bounced back and bounced back. So I don't know if he would have responded or not, but this is the kind of assumption that's built into a lot of news coverage now on political issues.
You'd mentioned the finances. What is Sun Media Corp's situation like right now?
Well, I think their situation must be fairly dire. I'm not an expert on Sun Media's economics, so don't go out and buy stocks based on my advice. But, it's got to be 15 or 20 years now, they've been paring their staff pretty dramatically all across Canada every chance they get. And you keep periodically hearing about these big rollbacks of 300 gone, 600 gone, 400 gone in the last month and so on. There was a Canadian Press News report late last year that indicated in the third quarter that their profit was down about 70%. If I've got this right, it was it was 69% from the previous quarter. Now, profit goes up and down in quarters and so on, and we can't read too much into that. But I would say we know the general state of the newspaper business has been hit really hard by online reading habits and changes in readers' habits. And I actually think they've hurt themselves by this move to the right, because Canadians, I think, want balanced news. but they're making it. They have an ideological agenda. So we've seen this in the States with organizations like Fox News. So there's actual reporting out there from Canadian Press, which is a responsible organization, indicating that the chain's bottom line is shaky. And we also see, I'm sure that they would deny this and say we're in good economic condition, but really, it's a well-known fact that the newspaper business generally is really, you know, having a crisis of how to cope with the advance of the internet and so on. So there's no question that when their profits margins start getting narrow like this, that there's an economic opportunity for people who are opposed to them to put some pressure on them.
Now, a couple of years ago, there were reports that Stephen Harper was openly backing an application by Sun Media for a TV network. Can you comment on the connections between Sun Media Corp and the Prime Minister's office?
Well, to some degree, this is conjectural, but we know that the Prime Minister, I think, is a sophisticated manipulator of the media and would like to have very sympathetic media like this around. There was a man who was one of his chief publicity aides in his office, Corey Tanak, I'm not sure how to pronounce his name, so I'm hoping I'm saying it correctly, who went to work for Sun Media to set up their Sun TV, their to me, amateurish television operation, right? And there was a huge controversy developed about this in 2010, I think it was, and people were drawing the connection between the Prime Minister's office and Sun TV and the very right-wing line Sun was taking. And an organization called AVAS really started to run an online petition. And one of the effects of this was that this man actually stepped aside for a time from Sun Media and said, well, he'd become the issue instead of their wonderful TV service, so he was going to step down. The TV service eventually got approved, and it's on the air now, although they didn't get the class of license that they had hoped to, and I'm sure they're still working on that. Subsequent to that, he's returned, and he's now working for Sun TV. So that's part of the story. So we have a guy from Prime Minister Harper's office who's actually working for this organization as the top guy. There was a meeting, and I'm sorry, I've forgotten the date, but there was a meeting in New York City in 2010. I think it might have been November 2010 when Harper, Rupert Murdoch from Fox News, and we all know all about Rupert Murdoch and we know about their journalistic ethics, and this man, Tanaki, all sat down in New York. There was another fellow there who was a big shot from Fox News, and broke bread together and talked about the future. So I think it's pretty well established that there's an interest in having something in Canada that would be like Fox News and that would serve the same role in Canada that Fox News serves in the United States. The whole neoconservative project for the last 30 years has been to move the center to the right. And they do this and it's been thought out. And they do this through think tanks and through neocon-controlled media and through right-wing politicians. And among the techniques that they use is to have pretty extreme commentators take extreme positions, and the thought is that that will move the whole debate to the right, that it makes people aren't maybe as prepared to go as far as Mr. Levant goes, but they're prepared to consider moving a couple of steps in that direction because that seems like a reasonable compromise compared to what he's advocating.
What kind of strategies do you think may be effective in dealing with this kind of media like the Sun?
Well, I don't think that in a country where the ruling political party is sympathetic to them and is benefiting from them, that you're going to get anywhere by going and talking to them about, we need to have political change here, or we need to have new regulations or new laws passed. That's a non-starter in this kind of atmosphere. So the only thing you can do is the thing that people have traditionally tried to do with media when they disagreed with the line it was taking, and that's to apply some economic pressure to them. So I wrote a blog post a while back in which I advocated, let's think about how to put some economic pressure on the Sun chain so that they will become, you know, move back toward the center, become more responsible in the kind of journalism that they're doing, and really stop encouraging outrageous positions. But I want to go back just for a second. I'll return to this theme, but what really concerned me about what Mr. Levant said about Mr. Nanshi was that it was a religiously bigoted attack. It was an attack on the man's religion. And there are an element, there is an element in our population who hate people on the basis of their religion. So whatever his objective was, and I don't think Mr. Levant's objective was, in fact, encouraging religious hate. I think it was an economic slash political thing. But whatever his objective was, one of the side effects is religious intolerance. And we don't need that in our society. It's a profoundly negative thing. So I think the son needs to be discouraged from doing that kind of thing. So how do you apply economic pressure? And what my blog post was about was, if we talk generally about, oh, gee, we should stop buying products that are sold by advertisers in the sun, or we should stop buying the sun, that doesn't really have much impact because it's so diffuse. We cannot boycott everything. So what I advocated doing was getting a group of people together and picking somebody who's advertising with them, picking a business, and saying, you know what, you're the target. We're going to boycott you. We're not going to buy your products because we want to cause you some economic pain because we know you're a big advertiser with that organization. We want you to go back and speak to them.
That's an idea worth trying, David. Thank you very much for talking to us this morning.
Okay, well, I really enjoyed it, and thank you for the opportunity.
I've been speaking with David Kleimenhager. He's a journalist and author, and you can read more about Sun Media at David's blog, albertadiary.ca.